G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Australia Institute, and at the time of recording this, on the 31st of March 2020, The Guardian Australia is reporting that our country has 4,413 cases of COVID-19 and 19 deaths. And it's really quite unbelievable how fast things are changing now. It was one weekend that we were going to the footy, and by the next weekend, the Prime Minister was calling going to Bondi Beach un-Australian.
There is no need for us to be moving towards not having mass gatherings of people. You can still go to the football, you can still go to the cricket, you can still go and play with your friends down the street, you can go off to the concert, and you can go out for a Chinese meal. You can do all of these things because Australia has acted quickly.
We will be advising against organised, non-essential gatherings of persons of 500 people from Monday. Now, that of course doesn't...
So a ban on non-essential gatherings of persons 100 and greater.
Hairdressers and barbershops will continue to be able to provide those services.
Boot camps and personal training is limited to a maximum of 10 people. Now, weddings can continue to be conducted, 5 people. Funerals, 10 persons. Amusement parks and arcades are now included, as were adult entertainment venues. Barre, I hope I've pronounced that correct. I'm not quite sure what that is, to be honest. But 10 people, that it should be reduced to 2 persons. So that's 4 square metres per person. But the point and the principle is very clear.
And since our last episode, the government has done a very welcome backflip and announced a wage subsidy scheme, a huge one, that will pay a flat $1,500 a fortnight to employers to cover full-time, part-time and casual workers as long as they've been employed for at least 12 months.
Also, the size and breadth of the economic lifeline being thrown to the private sector to save businesses and protect jobs has no precedent in Australia's history.
A massive $320 billion economic water bomb to dump on the coronavirus emergency as it burns through the economy.
Today I announce that we are committing $130 billion over the next 6 months to support the jobs and livelihoods of what we anticipate of being almost 6 million Australians who will need that lifeline.
Now, just a few weeks ago, the idea that this or any coalition government would take this kind of step would have been laughable. And it's really a tribute to the effective lobbying and organising of many stakeholders, but in particular the efforts of unions and the ACTU, that that has become a reality. So on one level, it's without doubt a huge win for workers. But on the other hand, there's a lot of devil in the detail. To unpack the details of the JobKeeper package, I'm joined once again by our chief economist, Richard Dennis. G'day, Richard.
Hi, Eb.
So, Richard, how big is this JobKeeper package and who does it support?
Oh, it's huge. $130 billion over 6 months. To run a program like this over a full year would cost $260 billion. To put that into perspective, the government usually spends a bit over $400 billion a year on everything. So the subsidy, the wage subsidy that was announced yesterday is enormous. It's probably the largest new social policy ever announced in Australia. And look, it's much needed. The economy was doing poorly at the end of last year. The RBA was begging for stimulus at the beginning of this year. And, you know, it's only a month ago, less than a month ago, that the government announced its first stimulus package where people thought $10 billion would be a lot of money.
That feels like months ago.
Yeah. Look, on average, the government's now announcing $10 billion a day in fiscal stimulus. In the last 20 days or so, we've had about $200 billion worth of stimulus announcements. So we've finally kind of got about the right number of zeros. When, you know, when the $10 billion stimulus was being suggested, I said at the time, I people thought I was being flippant, but I said, look, I think more like $100 billion is what's required. Well, I was too conservative, as I often am, Eb, and yeah, the government's outspent us quite significantly. So yeah, all up $200 billion, around 10% of GDP. And what people have to understand is, if you want to maintain anything like the size of the economy we had, and in turn the level of employment we had, once you crush, literally crush through government policy, the entire tourism industry, most of the air transport industry, most of the retail industry, and most of the food and beverages industry, you've got to fill that hole. If you don't pump about that same amount of money in that we just crushed out, then hundreds of thousands, millions of people will lose their jobs. And it's taken the government a little while, but they've figured that out now.
Richard, going to the details of the package, why was it that the unions and even business by the end were pushing for a wage subsidy as opposed to just letting everyone be taken up by, for example, you know, welfare?
Well, first things first, most developed countries have an entirely different approach to unemployment benefits than we do. In most countries, when you lose your job, you go on to some form of unemployment benefit or unemployment insurance that's usually a proportion of the income you were on. So, you know, Australia has, well, until recently, we had some of the stingiest unemployment benefits in the world. So most countries' unemployment benefits kind of look a bit like the 80% or 70% wage subsidy people were calling for. The reason that business and unions and ultimately the government supported this in Australia is that this downturn, this crisis that we're about to go through, is just unlike any downturn we've ever seen before. Usually a cyclical downturn, a recession, a depression, whatever you want to call it, usually it starts in part of the economy, it spreads to other parts of the economy, and as some parts are doing it tough, others are doing it well. And usually governments step in and use interest rates and government spending to try and sort of fix that. But this is unlike that in almost every way. It's the government that stepped into the tourism industry and shut it down. It's the government that stepped into the retail industry and shut it down. It's the government that stepped into the hospitality industry and shut it down. So it's actual government policy going in and literally crushing economic activity, huge amounts of economic activity. And sure, it's spending some money on the other side of the ledger, but it's the government that's causing the shutdown. And it's the government that's saying, look, this is going to last for 6 months. So usually businesses, when things start to turn down, they all come to their own conclusion about how long it's going to last and what they should do. But here, businesses are hearing at the very beginning of the crisis, not only are we going to shut your business down or your supplier's business down, but we're telling you it's going to stay shut down for 6 months. So why wouldn't firms shed an enormous number of workers in a big hurry? Because they're being told by the government that the government's going to continue to suppress an enormous amount of activity. So we had to come up with a way to encourage firms to hang on to their staff, because if the management were listening to the government, the management knew that this was unlike any other downturn they'd ever seen and was going to go on and on and on.
So I mentioned at the beginning that this is a flat rate of $1,500 a fortnight, and it will cover full-time, part-time and casual workers as long as they've been employed for at least 12 months. I, for one, personally, wasn't expecting the government necessarily to extend this type of a scheme to casual workers. There are some pretty big wins here in this package, aren't there?
Look, there really are. I mean, there'll be some people out there who are working four-hour shifts once a week who will now be getting $750 a week for the next 6 months. And let's be clear, that's a wonderful thing. You know, the government's looking for a way to pump a lot of money into the economy, and you know, they've gone for very broad and very simple. But as a consequence of that, there's a lot of people that higher income people that are going to lose their jobs and not have anything like the kind of support that they'd get if they were in New Zealand or in the UK. But also, I think most concerning with this, the design of this scheme, is the complete absence, of obligations on the employers that are receiving this subsidy to behave in particular ways. So it really, you know, they're just sticking with this trickle-down version of stimulus, that if you pump money into the economy through businesses, then that's the perfect way to do it. Well, you know, the reality is some businesses are going to have enormous windfalls here, with the taxpayer picking up an enormous percentage of their wage bill in businesses that were already profitable. So, yeah, some businesses have been completely smashed by this, but a lot of businesses were doing well. And the complete lack of targeting, combined with the complete lack of any obligations on employers, means that not only is this the most expensive government policy, I think, in the history of Australia, but I think the amount of that money that is going to flow to firms that didn't really need it is going to be enormous. And, you know, now's not the time to quibble over that, but, you know, 10 years after school halls, we're still talking about the community that got a hall that was a bit big. There's going to be tens of billions of dollars here flowing to very profitable businesses.
So presumably that's the kind of detail that we'll have to look out for once the legislation comes back to what's going to be quite a reduced parliament. Are there any other things that we can do to impose some more obligations on business? Like, is there anything to prevent a business exploiting this for their own profits, essentially? There's nothing that we know of at this moment to prevent that?
No. And, you know, we haven't seen the legislation yet. Hopefully there'll be debate about it. There'll be amendments to it to make it better. But, you know, to be clear, that, you know, they're saying only businesses whose revenues have fallen 30% are eligible. Well, revenue is a terrible proxy for profit. And there'll be some firms out there that have seen their revenues hit. They'll have responded to that by shedding some of their staff. So their revenues are down, their costs are down, their profits might be the same as they were. And now the government's going to step in and potentially pay 100% of the wage bill for that business that was already profitable. So, yeah, the complete lack of targeting at workers at risk of losing their jobs means that we're spending an enormous amount of money. But a lot of middle income earners are going to see significant cuts in their pay. Some low paid and casual workers are going to get a very big pay rise, and some businesses are going to get an enormous check from the federal government, which quite frankly they might not have needed.
And so the $1,500 is a flat rate, and the government's more or less pitching that as egalitarian. But as you've said, some workers are going to be better off, while others, mainly higher income earners, will be worse off. So what's in the long term, I guess, the benefits or the dangers for wages, given that before this crisis hit, we had the slowest wages growth since World War II?
Oh, look, great question. Australia has despite all the years of talking about deregulating our labour market, we've actually made it a very complex place and few people understand it. I'm an economist, not an industrial relations lawyer, but what we need to understand is that a lot of employers are now going to tell their employees, I'm only going to pay you the $750 the government's giving me. There's nothing to stop businesses cutting the wages of some of its workers now down to the level that the government is subsidising it. And again, different businesses are in entirely different circumstances, but this policy is so broad, we might actually see workers getting pay cuts at the same time that that businesses are getting enormous subsidies.
Richard, in your wildest dreams, did you ever imagine that the Morrison government would be guaranteeing incomes for workers in this way?
I'm always an optimist, Deb. look, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, but, you know, when the economy was already sluggish and then coronavirus was hitting it was obvious that we were going to need to spend hundreds of billions of dollars to stimulate the economy. I didn't know how long it would take the government to come to that conclusion. And to their credit, they've probably got there faster than I and many people thought they would. But they have got there now. $200 billion worth of new spending in 20 days. It's only the beginning. There will be a lot more money spent between now and the end of this crisis. You know, the government's talking about putting business into hibernation. Well, it's, as any sci-fi movie will tell you, it's harder to bring people back from the dead than it is to freeze them to sleep. We're going to have to spend a fortune to resuscitate this economy in 6 months' time. So, yeah, look, in my wildest dreams, I couldn't have cooked up coronavirus. I wouldn't have thought the government would get there as quickly as it has. It's still got a long way to go. I think we probably need to redesign and reshape this wage subsidy over the coming months. I think the problems with it will become worse and worse. But let's keep our eye on the prize here. The government has abandoned the idea that it needs a budget surplus. It's abandoned the idea it's irresponsible to have a deficit. It's abandoned the idea that the private sector and altruism can get us through this. And it's just spent $200 billion on Keynesian fiscal stimulus. I think the shape of that stimulus needs work, but at least now we're haggling about the shape, not talking about the need.
And interestingly, it's abandoned the idea that all you need to do to get a job is just to go out there and look harder. And,
no, have a go with it. You just got to have a go.
Have a go to get a go.
You have a go, you get a go, and yeah, no, all that's gone. Look, what else is gone? The idea that surpluses are good, gone. That paying down the debt's the number one priority, gone. The idea that the market is always more efficient than the public sector, gone. I mean, you know, it was only Christmas that Barnaby Joyce was out there shouting at clouds on video telling us that, you know, all he wanted to do was government to get out of the way. Just get out of the way. Well, I don't see anyone today wishing the government was smaller and doing less.
I certainly haven't heard Barnaby Joyce express such a wish any time recently.
Give it time.
And Richard, just finally, broadly speaking, you kind of talked about the different social security safety nets that other countries have. But broadly speaking, how does Australia's package compare to what's being offered overseas?
Look, the size of our stimulus is now, you know, 10% of GDP, starting to look like the size of the stimulus in other countries. The $130 billion wage subsidy is big. It's very big by international standards, but I don't think it's very well targeted. It's quick. They're getting it out. It's a big change in policy, but I think that lack of targeting is going to lead to a lot of windfall profits for a lot of businesses, and I fear some pay cuts for workers whose bosses are going to use the $750 minimum. I fear that some people are going to use that as a maximum. So, again, we'll have to wait and see the legislation. The government says the scheme's going to roll out for 6 months. No one thinks the economic crisis is going to be finished in 6 months' time. So I think we're going to have plenty of time to try and fix it.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
This has been a special episode of Follow the Money, and we're aiming to bring you shorter but more frequent episodes during the pandemic, so stay tuned. If you've got questions as a result of listening to this podcast or just about the Job Seeker package in general, don't forget to visit our website and register for the webinar featuring Dr. Jim Stanford, Director of the Centre of Future Work, who's going to be talking about how government can protect jobs and incomes through the coronavirus recession. That's Wednesday, the 1st of April at 1 p.m. and visit tai.org.au to register. For the latest health information, please check health.gov.au or listen to the ABC's excellent CoronaCast podcast, which comes out daily. This episode was recorded on Tuesday, the 31st of March 2020, and things may have changed since recording. You can visit tai.org.au for our latest research and content, and we're on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS. My Twitter handle is ebony_Bennett with a double N double T, and Richard is at RDNS_TAI. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy, and the montage today was made by Lizzie Jack. And our theme music is by Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum. You can find more of his music at pulseandthrum.com. And to finish up, please wash your hands regularly. Don't go out unless you have to. And thanks for listening.